Ya lo hace. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, September 16th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame with my co-host Dwayne Mullins, as always, joining us right now live from New York. It's not Saturday night, it's Monday morning, but we're going to talk about New York soccer. Of course, the Red Bulls, NYCFC, two different dichotomies in the same city right now to talk about New York. Mark Fishkin of Seeing Red. How you doing, Mark, this morning?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
No worries. We always like to do a little check-in on New York every so often. What prompted me to ask you was you made a comment that you thought that it was pretty clear to you that the road to MLS Cup is going through NYCFC Yankee Stadium. Explain that a little bit more. Expand on your thoughts there.
Sure. Well, this was before I had come to realize, of course, that the Yankees are probably not going to permit NYCFC to play at Yankee Stadium, because the Yankees will be having their own playoff experience there, which will send NYC into some Don Quixote-like quest to find a suitable home ground for very important games. But the comment I was making was really after watching them without Hebert and without Maxi Morales handle teams like San Jose. I know that Toronto had a very, very good performance there, but watching NYC, and as a 24-year Red Bull season ticket holder, it comes with a tremendous amount of pain to share my thoughts. But NYC is 6-0-1 in their last seven games. They've done it by rejiggering their lineup, and the thing that really gets me to my notion that the Eastern Conference is really headed NYC's way is the fact that they don't ever seem flustered. In many of their recent games, they have gone down, and in the last 20, 25 minutes of every match, seemingly that's at Yankee Stadium, is when they find another gear, they turn it on their tiny little awful field, and they're able to get results. And there's a sense of inevitability. Now yes, TFC, as you guys well know, has a nice unbeaten run of their own, and as they get all their pieces back and healthy, Atlanta took a surprise loss to Columbus this weekend, and Philadelphia, I think, has surprised everybody with their incredible performances, really punching above their weight down the stretch. But I don't believe there's a hotter team in MLS than NYC, and it's a perfect time to get there.
I'm going to let you get a little bit of your red out. Now you felt a little guilty complimenting them, but I want to talk about the stadium. You mentioned the possibility of them not having to or not having a home stadium because the Yankees play in the playoffs, and I think most of our listeners can agree that would be awful, just awful if they missed the playoffs. That was complete sarcasm. I hate the Yankees. Sorry.
I'm not a Yankees fan either, my friend.
that's good taste there. Anyway, talk about the stadium a little bit. How big of an issue will be that for them? And is there any movement on the stadium front?
Well, I don't profess to be an NYC insider at all, but those insiders who I speak to have noted that it has literally been, since the franchise was announced, that this notion of playing Yankee Stadium only as a temporary place. In fact, the Yankees took 25% ownership of the club, I think, as a pay-on to the idea that the Yankees are invested in the success of the team. However, the team's about to complete its fifth year in the league, and frankly, there has been almost no public information about where possibly the team may wind up eventually. There have been rumors about a parcel not too far away from Yankee Stadium in the Bronx, which had been brought up really in the early days of the team. Of course, their whole reason for being is to support the five boroughs, although frankly I think we can New Yorkers know that we really mean four boroughs, because there's no way that they're going to find a stadium suitable on Staten Island, nor would they ever put it there. So of course, there's just very little room left for a parcel of that size for soccer specifically to be built anywhere in the remaining boroughs. When it comes time to play off homes as well, the team has played at Citi Field, and as a Met fan, I've come to the realization the Mets will not be taking part in the postseason this year, which is completely fine. Any Mets season that's interesting past Labor Day is a big win for Met fans. But they famously had to go all the way up to the University of Connecticut's football stadium in East Hartford, Connecticut, to play a game up there. It remains to be seen that the NYCFC fans were did receive an email that said, "Yep, we've clinched home playoff games," which they have. The only question is really where those are going to be.
Now let's talk about a team in New York, kind of, that actually does have a stadium, the Red Bulls. Wow, 4-2 loss against Seattle. A little bit of a different trend in the standings for New York going down. It's becoming very crowded close to the 7th spot. New York in the 6th spots right now for the Red Bulls. What is the explanation in your mind for that slide?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'll say Red Bull fans have been waiting for 24 seasons for the team to finally come through and win in the postseason. I'm sure your Maple Leaf fans there can certainly understand that kind of frustration. They tend to go out in the most painful, tragic way every single year, and you could say that last night's game in Seattle was a so metro kind of a finish, right? They go down 2-0 inside 25 minutes. They fight and they claw and they scrape back to get it even with 20 minutes to play. And then they concede a horrific own goal 6 minutes from time to really knock the game out, despite the fact that they lost two players due to injury during the match. But when you're talking about the 2019 Red Bull season, I mean, there are a couple of reasons why the team has regressed this year. First of all, the team had sold Tyler Adams to Red Bull Leipzig last year, and were hoping that 19-year-old Christian Caceres was going to be the heir apparent to him. And there are different types of players. Caceres doesn't, while a very good young quality player, who was one of the players who picked up a knock last week, rather last night in Seattle, he doesn't have the kind of range and engine that Tyler Adams has, who really is looking to be a generational type player developed by the Red Bull Academy. So without Adams in front of the back line, destroying all the chances and taking balls away and things like that, the back line has suffered significantly. We've already given up, I think, 10 more goals than we did all of last year, and we have 4 matches left to play. So that's a big reason. That's a big part of it. The other is that Bradley Wright Phillips has disappeared. He didn't score for most of the second half of the season, picked up an injury, was out for a lot of this year. But since he's back, he's just lost a step. He can't do the things that he was accustomed to doing. And this is a guy who's in the top 10 of MLS goals all time. But over the last year of games, he's scored twice. And despite the fact that young Brian White has picked up some slack, he has 9 goals on the season and is now injured. He's coming back from an ankle injury. Just the production in the front just isn't there. And so a combination, it's really simple when you put it this way. They're allowing more goals. They're not scoring as many. They're not getting that type of challenging, difficult focus of an opponent's defense. And it's just been a lot tougher in every phase of the game for New York.
There's an easy narrative, Mark, because when I look at tomorrow's schedule of soccer, there's, RB Strasbourg is in the Champions League. First American coach ever in the Champions League, Jesse Marsh, former coach of the Montreal Impact, but especially the Red Bulls as well. When you look at Chris Armas and his body of work over the last 18 months, well, more a year and plus, when he took over from Jesse Marsh, and you look at the results today, and you look at that core player, that core group of players that was put together under Jesse Marsh, and it's at the end of their window. Is there an easy narrative here to go, it's all about the coaching staff, they changed the coach, and now you see the team doesn't win anymore and doesn't progress the way it did before? Is it a mix of everything? What is that big difference when you see the last 12 months with this group of players you saw growth before, and in the last 12 months, we don't seem to see the same progress going forward.
Yeah, no, I agree that the team has definitely regressed, and Chris Armas is taking a lot of the blame from Red Bull fans. But again, Chris actually did better with the team in 2018 when they won the Supporters Shield and set the record for most points in an MLS season. After Marsh left the club, Armas actually had a higher points per game after that. Now, a lot of fans certainly picked up the fact that early in 2018, this team was winning games 3-0, 4-0, 4-2 on a regular basis. And under Armas, the team was winning a lot more 1-0 games or 2-1 games. He has been trying to generate another way to play other than the energy drink soccer, Red Bull, full-on press and counter-press. It's not always been successful for Armas. And so given the fact that his striker basically disappeared off the face of the earth, given the fact that without Tyler Adams, it's been difficult, I think that Armas has rightly come under a considerable amount of pressure from Red Bull fans. And case in point, yesterday during the game, after pulling even, he pulls off Haku, who was responsible for the second goal, a tremendous finish in Seattle, and minutes later, an own goal on the other end. Is that Armas's fault that Sean Davis stuck his leg out and deflected a ball past Luis Robles? No, yeah. It's not. And yet, when you talk about a fan base that for the last 4 years has been within a stone's throw of MLS Cup, remember, 24 years, only one MLS Cup appearance in 2008. This team has been very, very, very good in the regular season, 3 shields in 6 years. Fans are just they're just beside themselves. It's incredibly depressing. And a match last night, the result last night is just, I think, was very, very typical. If they had been blown out and lost 4-0, you throw your hands up and go, they've lost the plot. But it's the fact that they are able to come back and show that there is quality on this team, coming back from 2 goals down in Seattle just to blow it in that way. Just the torches and pitchforks are out for Armas every single day.
Mark, you mentioned that it's been very successful in the regular season for the past few years for Red Bull. Certainly they've changed philosophies from about 5-6 years ago when they, for lack of a better way to put it, took the Galaxy model to heart and brought in the big-name players and went that way. They've since gone more of a development pathway. I think it's fair to say that that is a model that they seem yep. married to. Do you think that it is a model that can bring a championship in this modern era of Major League Soccer, or do you need to have some of that really top-end talent brought in from outside?
Yeah, I think it really has to be a mix, right? I think it can be a mix. I don't think you necessarily have to always go the Atlanta LAFC eight figure deals for young international stars and getting a Joseph Martinez and getting a Carlos Vela, but it sure couldn't hurt, right? And Toronto FC obviously was kind of the 1.0 of spending this kind of big money on international stars in order to carry them to greatness, right? Whether it was Giovinco or Bradley or Altidore or now Pozuelo, there is an understanding that that's the case. When you look at the comments, though, out of Red Bull Global Soccer leadership, which is, frankly, the New York team exists to serve Leipzig, and our goal is to develop players and sell them to Leipzig to further the Bundesliga team because that's where we're going to make our real money. And it's not wrong, that sentiment. I think it's really clear to understand what they're trying to do. It doesn't do a lot for engaging a fan base that's starved for a championship when you say things like, well, you're really a feeder team for a team in another country. There are Red Bull fans that were furious when Adams went to Leipzig. Furious. Because they, frankly, don't care about Leipzig. They want their team to win. And I think it's hard to be blamed. And I think that for all the good that Red Bull has brought, the stadium, the academy, the youth teams, a ton of regular season success, I think there are plenty of fans that are calling out for local ownership to take control of this team to win for the team's sake, because it's very, very difficult to generate a lot of support for a feeder team of another club elsewhere in the world.
To finish today, Mark, and looking at the Red Bulls and the future of this franchise in the league, what's the next jumping off point? What's the next big milestone? I know MLS Cup you mentioned a lot of times, and it's been 24 years and still no MLS Cup for the Metro Stars / Red Bulls, but outside of the Metro, outside of Major League Soccer, the MLS Cup, outside of that one big trophy that only one team out of 28 win every year, what is the success threshold? Well, what is the point, in your opinion, of course, that will make the fan base happy every year? Is there a point in the season, or a trophy, or a U.S. Open Cup, or any other example? What is the successful season threshold for the Red Bulls if MLS Cup is not to be won?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Of course, I'm old enough to remember where it was one of 10 teams going for it, and
that they still didn't. But
that
yes.
didn't seem to work out either. But nevertheless, yeah, I mean, I think a cup, certainly, if it's the Open Cup, if it's I really hesitate to say a League's Cup, if it's a CONCACAF Champions League championship, obviously this team won't be participating in next year's tournament unless something absolutely amazing happens, which I don't think anyone foresees. But they need to win a trophy. The team is seemingly dreadful in one-off or two-legged series. Thankfully, those aren't a fact of life in MLS anymore in the playoffs. I mean, consider this team has made the playoffs 9 years in a row. And this year looks to be on shaky ground, but with one win, frankly, they should be able to salt away another playoff appearance. 9 years straight years in the playoffs, and the inability to get through two rounds of playoffs, frankly, to get to MLS Cup. 9 years they've been eliminated by nine different teams. They've gone out on away goals. They've gone out on goal differential. They've gone out a thousand different ways. They've gone out by big players getting red carded in the middle of a crucial match at BMO Field, negating their one playmaker, negating themselves and Jozy Altidore, and that of course stops your question. So I don't think there's an answer. I mean, when you've gone this long and so many fans that have been there from the beginning or been there since the beginning of Red Bull Arena. I think fans are done with the shield. I don't think that's intriguing enough for them. I think for them, they really need a cup. They need the shot with the confetti on the stand and the branding and jumping up and down, singing ole, ole, ole. I mean, that is what this fan base needs. They need to see it. Otherwise, they're the 1990s Atlanta Braves, or they're the more recent Kansas City Chiefs, or they're a great regular season team that just hasn't been able to get it done. And that type of a legacy is really a challenge for a lot of fans.
The 90s Buffalo Bills. I thought you were going to go there, but no.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, no, but see, the 90s Bills made it to the Super Bowl.
That's
so
true.
That's true. That's okay, right? I think I'll quickly share a small anecdote. My son is now 15, but 5 years ago we were in Foxborough for the 2014 Eastern Finals, where the ball came over Tim Cahill's shoulder and he put it into the 20th row. And my young son, as we were going back to the bus for the long bus ride back from Foxborough, said, "We didn't even need to win, Dad. I just wanted to go to MLS Cup. I wanted to be at an MLS Cup." And when you think about, you and I remember before this league existed. Here was then a 10-year-old who, for in our house, MLS is as important as anything. And he just wanted to be at the big show. And I think Red Bull fans feel the same way.
Well, Mark, we hope that the show will be calling soon, hopefully for you and your son. On that note, thank you very much for your time. Oh, it's our pleasure, Mark. You can follow Mark's work, of course, on his Twitter account, at Mark Fishkin. You can also find him on Seeing Red New York. Thank you, Mark, for your time today, and we hope you have a great week ahead of you.
Hey, thanks for having me. Bye-bye, guys.
We'll be right back after this short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. I'm Kevin Larmey with Dwayne Rawlings live from Toronto as well. I'm live from Montreal, and we'll talk about Montreal in a second, Dwayne. But first of all, how was your soccer weekend?
It was pretty good, actually. It was an enjoyable weekend, well, other than, you know, the result in the one game, but whatever, it's a long season. I'm, of course, talking about Manchester City, and good for Norwich. It was a fun upset if you were a neutral there. But no, I enjoyed it. I had my eggs and two screens at once at the Dog and Bear in, on Queen Street to watch the Fiorentino Juventus game while the Manchester United Leicester game was on in the background. It was a nice little Saturday, Kevin.
And you know, at least there's one team of Joey Saputo who's been winning lately. Bologna second in Serie A as we speak. What a performance from Bologna. A big win this weekend. They were down 3-1, came back to win 4-3 with captain Blerin Zamali. Heard that name before. Oh yeah, that great player who didn't want to play here because he knew that it was better in Italy. Oh, I thought he was amazing. It's kind of interesting that we're going there because we're kind of talking about the impact. Big loss this weekend. 1-0 loss at home against FC Cincinnati. Their second loss against Cincinnati this year. Of course, there's the narrative, Dwayne, of old Jack Stern, Yoann Demme, former coaches of the Montreal Impact, coming back to Montreal, beating their former team at home. The team that only had 1 point in their last 27 points opportunity, getting the job done on the road, but I have to say, this was one of the worst games I have seen live. The response of the players, but it's not about the players and their response. Oh, the players are not playing. They're not trying. They're not give effort. They do. They were not set up for success. I blame one person and one person alone for the defeat on Saturday. And that person is Wilmer Cabrera.
Fair enough. I mean, we talked about it when he was hired, that it was a bit of a strange hire. We thought that maybe it might have had some pragmatic reasons behind it to sort of strive for just results to get into a playoff match. But obviously that's becoming increasingly more difficult. They're not eliminated yet, but it's tough. 3 points back with, three to play. And so you expand on that, though. Like, what do you think specifically is the problem there with his setup, his tactics?
Well, I'll get to his tactics and his setup before, but there's something, Dwayne, that I didn't want to believe when it happened. I was in my mind, I was thinking, of course, they didn't fire Rémy Gallon just to get a little coach bump to make sure they make the playoff, right? Of course, they did not fire the biggest investment in a coach that they ever did just to for 6 points, right? Of course not. There must have been something else. It might have been another reason. But the more the situation is unfolding in front of me, the more I'm seeing, well, this reaction, reactionary decision. It was taken by President Kevin Gilmore to make a little change for a coach bump, an increase in performance for a couple games. It doesn't have to be sustained. There's only so many games left. So I thought, okay, fine. You get a couple wins that you might not have gotten, and you get yourself in the playoffs. But what does that lead you after? What does that leave this project? Where does that project is going from there? It feels like you jeopardize your future for short-term gain. I do not understand, of course, and then you think about the decision process and the thought-making process that Kevin Gilmore talked about in his flight back home, and they flew with Wilmer Cabrera in, they met together. He's the only candidate that they met to change the coaching staff this season. And for me, that's where there was a big mistake, and that's where a lot of fans are not happy right now for many reasons. The results, of course, Dwayne, but also the fact that the decision maker right now, Kevin Gilmore, it's his first year with the Impact, first year working in professional soccer. He has experience in professional sports and in business before, in different sports and different environment with a different mentality and different reactionary, usually different instinct reactions, right? In soccer, you should not fire your coach as the first movement. That there's just other things that need to be done. There's other, I would say, precedent. There's other precedent being set by other coaches there too, Dwayne. And for me, the change of a coach for just a coach bump is a big mistake. The mentality of, okay, I need to do something to shake things up, and I'm going to fire the coach to do that. That mentality does not apply to soccer, does not apply to Major League Soccer, does not apply to our sport in North America. And that's where I think it's a shame. I've seen, of course, the tweets already. Kevin Gilmore out. That's kind of unfair. You got to give the guy the time to change anything, and he hasn't done yet all the proper changes in infrastructure. And the first one of that change is to name the technical director of the Montreal Impact, which we're still waiting for. The big name everyone's been thinking that will happen is Lino Di Cuolo, vice president of Major League Soccer, who maybe will take the job for the Montreal Impact. But that's where I think people have to calm down and not ask for the head of Kevin Gilmore. He was not supposed to make that decision. He's not the technical director, Dwayne, right? He's the president. And he only made that decision because of a lack of a technical director right now and a lack of technical vision for this club for the next 2 to 3 to 4 years. That vision now is null and void. There is none. That vision will be put together by the new technical director. So, ideally, no firing of Rémi Gard would have taken place. You would have waited till the end of the season. But Kevin Gilmore felt the need to shake things up, to get a certain response from the players, from the team, from the rest of the coaching staff. But it wasn't to happen. And for me, that's the mistake. The mistake, again, of alienating players. Because there's one thing I can tell you, I cannot name names, but Saturday after the games, I was told by more than one player of the Montreal Impact personally, to me, they don't know what he's doing. They don't understand his mentality. They don't understand why he's subbing people when he is. What Wilmer Cabrera is doing to the Montreal Impact is not setting them up for success. It's confusing everyone. And the Impact are not going to make the playoffs. And if you think they can change mentality to beat one of the best teams in the last 4 weeks in Major League Soccer and Toronto FC in 2 straight games to win a trophy, well, you got to look yourself in the mirror because things don't change that quickly.
It increasingly looks like that might be the only thing Montreal has to play for. But as I say, 3 points, but it just seems like a mile because, as you mentioned, since Cabrera came in, there hasn't been, they were looking for a coach bump. They got some kind of bump. I don't know if it was off though.
It's a negative one? Does a negative bump count? I don't know.
Well, yeah, precisely. And it's like we talked about it at the time. We've talked about it every time these things happen. The idea of a coach bump is precarious in terms of whether there's any evidence of it being true. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. It's kind of just all over the place, but I think confirmation bias and our belief in wanting to believe that's a certain sports cliches allows us to believe in the idea. And unfortunately, I think too many executives within the sports world also either buy into it or believe that it is a solid diversionary technique from other problems, right? Yeah. So fire the coach as the scapegoat, and then everyone's, oh, good, we got this guy coming in, and that should change things up. But look, it's been a disappointing season, disappointing second half of the season. Montreal looked good at the start of the year, really. But
that's why I'm mad, because you negated an amazing beginning of season with winning games on the road more often than not in the first 10 games. When do you have that in Major League Soccer? Never. If you have that, you gotta capitalize. It might be the last year of Nacho Piatti with the Impact. Do people understand how you're going to miss Nacho Piatti? I know you might not be thirsty and you don't miss your water until the well runs dry, but guess what? There's only a few drops left and the sun is coming up, so it's about to get real dry.
Yeah, look, Piatti's injury problems this year haven't helped the Impact, but that alone isn't the reason for their struggles. It's just from an outside perspective, it doesn't look like there's a plan really there. Or
there's none. There's no sporting plan. There's no tactical plan. There's no roster plan. You signed a defender 6 weeks before the end of the season, and he's not even ready yet, and he's got 3 games left to play, and he cannot even play in the Canadian Championship because he was not in your 28-man roster 3 months ago. So you signed Rod Funny because probably the coach before wanted him, and you started the process of signing him before before you fire the coach, and then you fire the coach, and the new coach doesn't want to play him, and he barely wants to play Baloo and doesn't play the other kids. Jeez. And you say you're going to take risk? The real risk here was hiring Wilmer Cabrera.
Yeah, and they never really gave an indication of how long he was hired for, so there is a possibility that he will just quietly walk out the door at the end of this season. But that's
a possibility,
though, right?
A possibility? No. If Wilmer Cabrera's back with the Montreal Impact, there's something I don't understand. Not just about soccer, not just about sports, but about life. Because,
it just the whole thing, and I said it at the time, and I, you know, we had a nice back and forth in that. You presented sort of the positives when he was hired, but sounding by what you're saying here, it sounds like you've come around a little bit on that.
Well,
but
I gave everyone a chance. I'm gonna give you the chance. I'm gonna give you that rope. What you do with the rope, that's on you. And what he did
fair enough. Yeah, there's a noose there for sure. It struck me as not, they fired him for whatever reason and didn't really have a good plan in place of what they wanted to accomplish with that. And his hiring base, without doing any search, really spoke to that. Really, if they did feel the need that he had to go, they should have hired an intern and done a proper search. And maybe this is what it is, but it's confusing people by the sound of it. It's confusing the players, and that's not ideal.
Well, yeah. And to be fair, for players to talk to me, little podcast guy who's there for games and always is there, but I'm not there to create controversy. It's not my style. I'm there because I'm there, and I report, and I talk about stuff that I see, and that's what I do. But for them to reach out to me to show that they're not happy, it tells you a lot of what's going on in that locker room. And there's a lot of leaders not showing up every day in that locker room. It's always the same guys coming after the games to talk to people. The Bakary Sanyas, the Samuel Piet. Those are the guys, the Evan Bush, the Daniel Lovitz. Those are the names, those are the faces that I see after pretty much almost every game. And I feel bad for players like Bakary Sanyas giving their all for this club. Dwayne, there was a point when Ledesma was injured on the sideline against Cincinnati on Saturday, and there was some substitution, and Lapalainen was coming in, and Okwonkwo just did something, and people were like, why did you... It was Camacho who hit Ledesma on a tackle, and Ledesma really fell hard, and people were yelling at each other. Piatti was gesturing to other his teammates, where should I be? Where should I go? For Piatti to be confused where he's supposed to be playing, you're doing something wrong. You're taking the instinct of one of the best players in the league away and making him think of what he should be doing when you need to score a goal. I did not get that. But the way the team, the players were reacting with each other, yelling at each other, pointing, blaming each other instead of working together. I haven't seen a team wearing the Impact logo in a few weeks, and I saw one crumble on Saturday. Can they recover in time? Is there enough gorilla glue in the world to piece this pot back together before Wednesday, when a trophy's on the line, when you're playing your rivals, when a lot of people in Montreal are waiting for the result of this home and away series before renewing their season tickets? Yeah, it's that point, and we'll see who shows up on Wednesday.
TFC hasn't lost since August 6, so obviously they go into the tie as the favorite, I think it's fair to say. And by the way, they've all but clinched a playoff spot with the win, and Montreal's loss on the weekend. The magic number for TFC is 1. So any lost point from either team lost your game point will clinch TFC into the playoffs, which is a very low bar, but at least that's been cleared now.
TFC's looking more like they're going to host the playoff game than just take part, so that's always a positive too. But Dwayne, Montreal is just... The chances of Montreal to make the playoffs are really slim at this point, and they're playing in L.A. on Saturday. They have to go face Zlatan, who just scored his 26th goal in the weekend last night, which is the highest tally for an L.A. Galaxy player ever. So can you imagine? The Galaxy might miss the playoffs while having their best ever scoring performance by a player in a season. But yeah, for the Impact, it's not going to be easy. And it's not going to change. And of course, you can have the band-aid of the Canadian Championship. You win it, you get something out of the season. But truly, what's needed is a technical director that comes in not just to do a job, that comes in with a vision to build for the next 5 years, and not just reaction to what we need to do, not just reaction to, oh, we're not making the playoffs, we need to change things to make the playoffs. Making the playoff is not a goal. It's a symptom of your goal. Your goal is to win something, and to win something, you have to make the playoffs. It's not the be-all, end-all. What's the point of showing up and losing 10-0 against NYCFC in the second round or something? There is no point. But at least if it's in the bigger picture of we're building something for the future, then I can live with it. But right now, there's none of all of this. And this is what I've heard Saturday at the stadium from media, but more importantly, from fans. A lot of fans are not having fun anymore. And at the end of the third whistle, at the end of the game, whistles and boos, yeah, there was a little bit. There was a little. But indifference is what I felt. And that is probably a lot more dangerous than boos.
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, you know, it harkens back to the end of 2013 at TFC. No one was even reacting to losses anymore in the stands. It was just, okay, let's go. What bar are we going back to? That was kind of the vibe then. They, of course, shook it up the next in the offseason between that, and maybe that's what Montreal needs to do. They need a complete reset of some kind to get the relevancy back to the people that care the most about it, which, you know, when you've got indifference with your hardcore, that's a problem. And it was a very surprising result, to say the least, on the weekend, but at the same time, maybe it shouldn't have been. Looks tough for the impact. But
yeah, no.
Three more games. See what happens. Five, really. But
yeah. We'll talk more tomorrow about the rest of the games in Major League Soccer this weekend. We'll look at the standings, and we'll talk about Europe tomorrow, of course, because Tuesdays are for Europe. But Dwayne and I wanted to do a deep dive to at least give you some info, to give you some sense of what's happening in this locker room. But there's something happening in the locker room that I can tell you, and it's from the horse's mouth. So there's that. And on that note, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie. I will calm down, I promise you. I'll be good for tomorrow. My heart's not going to be too stressed because of all this. It's okay. It's sports. It's not necessarily life or death.
It most certainly is not, but it sometimes feels that way. What's the old saying? It's much more important than that or something?
Exactly. It's not life and death. It's even more important than that. And on that note, I guess it's time to wrap up today's show. At 24th Minute for Dwayne, at Soccer Today SPN for this show, and at Kev Laramie for myself. Tomorrow, of course, we'll be back with more on the world of football with a soccer perspective. Thanks to Mark Fishkin of Seeing Red for his time today. And until tomorrow, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.